when somebody shechts his friend's animal, an animal which is not his, to Avodah Zarah. The Gemara records a dispute about the animal's halachic status. Is the animal permitted to provide pleasure now to human beings? If you boil its fat, can you use that for soap? Or does the animal become asur b'hana, forbidden to provide pleasure to human beings, in the same manner as it would had the animal belonged to the one who shechted it? This is the dispute in the Gemara. And I want to focus for a second on the opinion which says that ein adam oser davar she'ino shelo. A person does not have the power, does not have the capacity to render something which is not his forbidden to benefit from asur b'hana. What exactly is the logic behind this position? There's a fascinating dispute between two achronim which revolves around the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and is really very critical to understanding why in our sugya ein adam oser davar she'ino shelo. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that when the Jewish people served the Egel HaZahav in the wilderness, at that point in time, all of the Avodah Zarahs in Eretz Canaan became forbidden to derive benefit from. Ordinarily, had the Jews not served Avodah Zarah, those Avodah Zarahs would have been mutar b'hana, because the Avodah Zarahs belonged to the Jews. The entire land belonged to the Jews. Still belongs to the Jews. Belonged to us since the times of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov, when Hashem promised to give the land to the Jewish nation. And according to Chazal, Yaakov Avinu performed a Maisa Kinyan, an act of formal acquisition, on all of Eretz Yisrael on behalf of his descendants. So therefore, everything in Eretz Canaan belonged to the Jews, even though the Jews were still, at the time, wandering in the desert. So when the Goyim bowed down to the trees, to the Asherahs, in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't have the ability to render those trees asur b'hana, because the trees belonged to the Jews, they did not belong to the Goyim, and ein adam oser davar she'ino shelo. The Goyim didn't have the capacity to render something forbidden which was not theirs. However, when the Jews served Avodah Zarah, says the Gemara, they revealed that they were nichaluhu, that they were happy and content with the existence of idol worship in the world, and they were happy and content with the existence of idol worship even when the subject of that worship was their own property. And therefore, all of the Avodah Zarahs which the Goyim served in Eretz Yisrael became asur b'hana, because the Goyim were fundamentally doing it as shluchim, as agents of the Jews. And this is what the Gemara says. Now, there's a dispute amongst achronim, as I mentioned, about which part of this Gemara to focus on. Do we focus primarily on the fact that the Goyim were treated as agents, as a shliach of the Jews in their idol worship? In which case, had there not been this quasi-formal shlichos, then the Avodah Zarahs would not have become asur? Or do we focus on the nichusa, the fact that the Jews were content with having their property worshipped as idols, without the necessity for a formal component of shlichus, of agency? It's sufficient with nichusa. The Machane Ephraim says that the formal component of shlichus is indispensable. If not for that, the Avodah Zarahs, the Asherahs, would not have been asur b'hana. In contrast, the Yad Avraham says that the Shlichus is redundant. As long as a Nichusa exists, a person can be Oser Davar She'eno Shalo. And I believe that this dispute speaks to a fundamental chakira in the nature of this halacha, that Ein Adam Oser Davar She'eno Shalo. Because on the one hand you can say that the deficiency which prevents a person from rendering something which is not his, Aser Behana, is a deficiency in his connection, in his tziruf, to the object. Because the more connected a person is to a particular object, the more of an influence he can have on that object's status and on that object's fate and destiny. The less connected a person is, the less influence he's going to have. We find this in the physical realm, that when people are very close, in fact, when people are touching an object, they can exert more influence upon that object than when they're far away. We find this in the sociological realm, that two people who share a close relationship are more prone, more apt to influence one another than a stranger would be able to influence either of them. Because the closeness grants a degree of influence which distance or difference does not allow. So one form of closeness is the closeness of an object with its owner. The owner can exert a greater degree of influence on the object because of his connection to that object than someone who's not the owner. Just like a parent can exert more influence on a child, not that parents own the child, but that the connection, it's not a physical connection, you can't trace physical proximity along those lines, but there is a conceptual degree of connection which does not exist between the child and anybody else. So the same thing, there's a degree of conceptual connection between the owner and his property which doesn't exist between the property and anything else. So therefore, only the owner is capable of changing the status and the fate of his object. And that means that even if the owner is happy that somebody else is attempting to change the object status, it will be insufficient. Because we need this degree of connection, which is not present. However, that's the position of the Machne Ephraim.